A record-setting Christmas boosted Hollywood's box office take for the year over $9 billion, making it the second biggest year in Hollywood history. Bob Mondello notes that several of 2003's most popular movies are also some of his favorites.
Sometimes movie critics seem to be shouting in the wilderness with no one listening, but this year, I have to say I feel remarkably in sync with the movie-going public about at least two pictures, the number one film of the year right now, and the one that's going to be number one when the dust settles in a couple of months. The latter film, obviously, is the final installment in the Lord of the Rings trilogy, Return of the King.
Is there any hope, Gandalf, for Frodo and Sam?
There never was much hope. Just a fool's hope.
The spell cast by this adventure fantasy is so captivating that about the only thing that could keep audiences away would be the discovery that Frodo watching causes mad cow disease. Happily, Return of the King isn't just popular, it's epic movie-making of a pretty high order. And something similar could be said about the film that it's on its way to supplanting as the year's box office champ, an epic odyssey of the animated sort. Finding Nemo.
Will you quit it?
What?
Stop following me, okay?
What are you talking about? You're showing me which way the boat went.
A boat? Hey, I've seen a boat. It passed by not too long ago. It went, this way. Follow me.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. What is going on? You already told me which way the boat was going.
I did.
The Pixar animators proved again what magicians they are with visuals and with resonant characters and stories, in this case about a clownfish father searching for his son. Another terrific film centered on a father-son tale is Barbarian Invasions, though in this one the son is rescuing the father. The picture is a sequel to The Decline of the American Empire, a 1986 comedy in which eight Canadian intellectuals talked and talked, mostly about sex. In Barbarian Invasions, those same intellectuals are talking about more serious topics, and the chatter is sometimes as wrenching as it is funny. Still, the most distressing tale of fathers and sons was a true story called Capturing the Freedmans. It documents the disintegration of a suburban family when charges of sexual abuse are leveled at two of its members. What makes the film compelling isn't just that situation, but the fact that the family relentlessly documented its own breakup with home movies.
Well, this is private, so if you're not me, then you really shouldn't be watching this, because this is supposed to be a private situation between me and me. It's between me now and me in the future. So turn it off. Don't watch this.
If Capturing the Freedmans showed a family in crisis, the Brazilian youth gang drama City of God captured a crisis enveloping a whole society. The film, shot with handheld cameras and using real street children as its subjects, is a harrowing portrait of 10-year-olds with guns in slums that a desperate government seems to have all but abandoned. There was a lot of talk about how gloomy the Cineplex got this year, with some films downright epic in their misery. The most resonant of those is House of Sand and Fog, about, of all things, a real estate dispute over a California bungalow. The house, you realize as positions harden, represents very different things to the culturally different people fighting over it, one a recovering drug addict, the other a principled Iranian immigrant. Culture clash is also the theme in a much lighter movie, a comedy in which Bill Murray plays a fading Hollywood star who's in Japan shooting a Japanese liquor ad and wondering how much is getting lost in translation.
You are a movie star?
Yes. Yes, I should be doing movies.
Yeah, but... And the Lat Pack, you know Lat Pack?
Rat Pack?
Rat Pack, oh, yes, rat. Please.
A ring-a-ding-ding?
Yeah.
Murray's encounters with a young photographer's wife, played by Scarlett Johansson, give Lost in Translation a delicately wistful tone that's rare for a Hollywood picture these days. That's seven of the top ten. The next two are fascinating exercises in cinematic form. 21 Grams tells what turns out to be a fairly straightforward story about three strangers linked by a terrible car crash, but the director has sort of scrambled it in the editing booth and reassembled it in a way that keeps making you rethink what you've just seen. It's work, but it's worth it. The narrative trick in American Splendor, a biography of comic book writer Harvey Pekar, is to have the real Harvey Pekar looking on as an actor plays him.
Okay, this guy here, he's our man, all grown up and going nowhere. So if you're the kind of person looking for romance or escapism or some fantasy figure to save the day, guess what? You got the wrong movie.
Since Picar uses his own life in his comics, this qualifies as an homage to his technique. As he's the ultimate sad sack, it also qualifies as hilarious. Now, because I'm not bound by the rules of the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences, I'm rounding out my top 10 with a film that didn't play in theaters, but who cares? It has terrific performances by Al Pacino and Meryl Streep, and Mike Nichols was behind the camera, and it has a $60 million budget. I mean, come on, it's a movie, even if it played first on HBO. A movie about AIDS called Angels in America.
Chaos, baby. Lesion number one. Wine dark kiss of the angel of death.
Oh, pleat.
I'm a legionnaire.
Foreign legion. The American legion. Legionnaire's disease.
Stop.
My troubles are legion.
Will you stop?
Don't you think I'm handling this well?
10 is an arbitrary number, so let's ignore it. My preliminary list had 22 films, and knocking some of them off was almost painful. In America, for instance, a warm domestic drama about an Irish family that settles in New York, and Girl with a Pearl Earring, a ravishingly beautiful biopic about the artist Vermeer and his most celebrated model. There wasn't a better performance all year than Charlize Theron's glamour-free one in Monster, the story of a Florida serial killer, and Hayden Christensen almost made up for being so dull in the most recent Star Wars movie with his portrayal of a disgraced journalist in Shattered Glass. It would have been entirely possible to fill a list with nothing but eccentrically made documentaries this year, what with Spellbound, an amusing and genuinely suspenseful chronicle of a national spelling bee, My Architect, a portrait of the artistic brilliance and personal failings of architect Louis Kahn, made by his illegitimate son Nathaniel, and Errol Morris's The Fog of War, in which former Defense Secretary Robert McNamara talks relatively candidly about being the architect of the war in Vietnam.
We saw Vietnam as an element of the Cold War, not what they saw it as, a civil war. We were wrong.
Throw in Spider, in which Rafe Fiennes is caught in a web of memories, and Holes, an enjoyably quirky kid flick, and you very nearly have a second 10. Not bad for a year that's mostly been regarded as an in-betweener, and now we all trundle off bravely into 2004, when Hollywood will unveil, with great fanfare, such would-be classics as Barbershop 2, Spider-Man 2, and the long-anticipated Scooby-Doo 2. Can you wait? I'm Bob Mondello.
You can find the full list of Bob Mondello's favorite films of 2003 at npr.org.